damage. Parts of the nation's four eastern states have flood warnings posted right now. I'm Ron Flatter, Fox News Radio.
The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune Radio Show, ladies and gentlemen. I am the agent for truth, Joe Bannister, your host. Happy Saturday morning to you. It's Saturday morning, January 15th, 2011. Freedom Above Fortune Radio Show comes to you courtesy of Frank Talk 104.3 FM, as well as worldwide on the Internet, courtesy of Liberty Works Radio Network. Tell your friends they can listen to this great network and support it by visiting www.lwrn.net. Liberty Works Radio Network brings you radio programming you will not hear anywhere else. As always, I ask you to support the network so that this kind of radio programming can continue. When you listen to lwrn.net, please consider clicking on the Join Donate button in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage of the website. And given the many blessings God has bestowed on our country, I dedicate every show to our Father in Heaven. So I always start the show by praying as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Well, our country is in deep, deep trouble, and I urge everyone to fervently pray for God's blessings on our country. Let's redouble our efforts to obey His commandments, especially refraining from taking the Lord's name in vain. I invite you to join my email list by visiting my website at freedomabovefortune.com. You can click on mailing list on the left-hand side of the homepage. And then you can keep up with the latest updates on what's happening in my activism program, and as well as many of the guests that come onto the show. Lots of very good information. Speaking of good information, we try to have it on this show from 7 to 9 a.m. Pacific time. So keep a paper and pen handy so that you can copy down important information. We're also inviting callers. And the call-in number is 410-848-9191. That's 410-848-9191. For those new to the show, I'm a former special agent with the Internal Revenue Service Criminal Investigation Division. I no longer work for the IRS because during the last 2 years of my service there, I performed an off-duty investigation into claims that the income tax laws did not actually require Americans to file federal income tax returns and pay federal income tax, and that the IRS was actually deceiving the American public about their true income tax obligations. After gathering and analyzing a mountain of evidence, I concluded that these claims about the federal income tax system were largely true. And when I asked my IRS supervisors to discuss my conclusions with me, they not only refused to have any discussions with me, but they also encouraged me to resign from the agency. So my IRS career came to an end rather abruptly in 1999 when I did resign from the Internal Revenue Service. And I've been speaking about my experiences and conclusions regarding the federal income tax and other liberty-related matters ever since. I'm featured in a film called America, Freedom to Fascism. And if you haven't seen it, you must see it. You can go on to Google Video or YouTube and just type in Freedom to Fascism, and it's available on the Internet, or you can order DVDs at freedomtofascism.com. There's all the administrative issues. Now we can get to my guest. I'm very excited to have as my guest on the show, at least for the first hour. That's Sheriff Richard Mack. He served two terms as Sheriff of Graham County, Arizona, and especially timely to have Richard on the show. He has some, I hate to call it inside information, but just information that's probably not well publicized, except for those who have followed Richard's story and are familiar with the Second Amendment protection battle that we many of us are engaged in. Anyway, Richard, welcome to the show.
Well, Joe, thank you so much. It's it's always great to be with you, and I appreciate the time that you've offered me today.
Well, thank you. I just admire you so much, and you fought the battle. You probably at the beginning didn't really know. Well, you've mentioned as you speak, didn't quite know what the battle would involve, and couldn't believe it when it was finally reached the end of it. But maybe for the listeners, I'm sure many know of you and your story. And, of course, we want to talk about the recent Arizona tragedy and your knowledge about that. But give the listeners just a brief thumbnail of who you are and, the battle that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, as you, I started a career in law enforcement. That's basically all I ever really wanted to do, and I spent 20 years in law enforcement. First started as a patrol officer in Provo, Utah, and I'm from Arizona. Both my wife and I are from southern Arizona, small towns, and I finished up college in Utah, and then I decided to stay on with the Provo Police Department while I was there, and did just about everything you could do in law enforcement there. I was a school resource officer, an undercover narcotics officer. School resource officer included all crimes relating to juvenile delinquency. I became the juvenile delinquency and juvenile crime specialist for the department. And then I got promoted to corporal and sergeant, and then I finished as sergeant detective. And then I decided to move home to Arizona in 1988 and run for Graham County Sheriff. And that was a dream come true. I actually got elected. It was a very improbable and unlikely election, though, because I'd never served in law enforcement anywhere in the state of Arizona. And I hadn't lived in my hometown for 11 years, and I walked into town and said, make me your sheriff. And it was really a kind of a miraculous election. And then in 1992, I was reelected. And then in 1993, someone in Washington, D.C. by the name of Bill Clinton started spreading propaganda, of course, and no one was better than he at this, about the Brady Bill. And he said that the Brady Bill was going to make our nation so much safer, to the extent that our police officers in this country would not even need to carry guns anymore. And his propaganda machine was really going to town on this, and never once did they tell the truth about the Brady Bill, that it would commandeer sheriffs in this country for federal bidding. And not only commandeer, but force them under the threat of being arrested if we failed to comply with this unfunded, unconstitutional mandate to participate in this federal gun control scheme known as the Brady Bill. And I was the first sheriff in the United States to file a lawsuit against the Clinton administration to stop the Brady Bill and to get out from underneath the yoke that had been placed on me by my own government. And this battle was used against me politically, and I didn't win at the United States Supreme Court. And I guess that's a good point to make there, is six other sheriffs joined the lawsuit. Only seven out of 3,100 sheriffs in this country joined this lawsuit. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court, where Sheriff Jay Prince from Montana and I stood before the Supreme Court in December of 1996. And on June 27, 1997, the United States Supreme Court, in a 5-4 split decision, ruled that the Brady Bill indeed violated the 10th Amendment, that the federal government has no authority over the states and cannot compel the states to do anything. They are not our boss. They have no authority or no jurisdiction to tell any sheriff what to do. And specifically, Justice Scalia says that the states are not subject to federal direction. They cannot compel the states to enact or enforce a federal regulatory program. And so it's probably, in fact, I just talked to a lawyer in Beaumont, California, this past Saturday, a week ago today, and he said that he studied this case in law school, and I said, would you agree? I said, I've had other judges and attorneys tell me that this is the most powerful 10th Amendment decision in the history of our country, not just in the past few years, but in the history of our country. And he said, yes, it is. He says, undoubtedly. And so I would tell your listeners the same thing. It is the most powerful 10th Amendment decision. We're talking about state sovereignty. Scalia actually calls state sovereignty one of our structural protections of liberty. That's a quote right from the decision. And so now I've put all this information together in several different books that are available on my website. But I travel the country now all over. And I'm thrilled to announce that last night we had our first Tea Party meeting and rally in my hometown of Safford, Arizona. And it was very well attended, and it was a good showing because the Australian Broadcast Network or Australian Broadcast Corporation was here with a couple of reporters filming the whole thing last night and interviewing me about the event in Tucson last Saturday, and it was an amazing event to show at least all the people in Australia how excited we are here about the Tea Party movement. And it was a great day yesterday for the Tea Party movement, and I'm thrilled to be involved with you in this what Patrick Henry called the holy cause of liberty.
Well, I'm speechless as far as just being able to play a small role and be able to meet people like yourself. I mean, and I guess we can probably agree that we don't exactly stumble into these little battles, but you know, I think just by asserting a little integrity and just, you know, doing what's right, it's amazing kind of where it takes you. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And what I'm actually trying to do is let every peace officer in this country know to look at this case and to see what it said about peace officers in general, and what the first judge, who you alluded to, that I might have a little information about the shooting and the tragedy of last Saturday in Tucson. The most unimaginable and unspeakable horrific event. And Judge John Roll, who was murdered and taken out by this lunatic coward, was the judge who actually heard my case first at the district court level. I wouldn't be talking with you. I would have never met you had it not been for Judge John Roll. The federal government went after me in every way they could, to remove me from the case, claiming I had no standing, and they used a lot of technical realities to get me out of there. And there's a law in Arizona that says that only the county border supervisors, the county commissioners, are the only ones, or the county attorney, can represent the county in any legal action or lawsuits. And so they tried to remove me from the lawsuit, saying I had no standing, that I don't represent the county in such matters. And when Judge Roll saw this, that they were trying to remove me, he stood behind me. He defended me. And he ruled that the Brady Bill does not commandeer the border supervisors. The Brady Bill does not commandeer the county attorney. The Brady Bill directly commandeers the sheriff, both personally and in his official capacity. And even though the law said that, Judge Roll ruled with common sense and common law and the Constitution, and made a powerful ruling on my behalf.
Fantastic. Well, we have a break coming up. Our guest is Sheriff Richard Mack. And Richard is at SheriffRichardMack.com. that your website?
SheriffMack.com.
SheriffMack.com. So we'll be right back with our guest, Richard Mack. Thanks for joining us.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It seems these days I'm in a haze and I can't concentrate on things. Can't eat or sleep, feel incomplete and kind of scared and creepy. I look over my shoulder lots and shudder when I watch TV. I bite my nails and cuticles and watch my words very carefully. I bite my lip a lot and fidget with the buttons on my blouse. Why? Because there's a communist living in the White House. Why aren't people shocked or something? Why aren't people up in arms? Does anyone read history or see red flags or hear alarms? The streets are filled with deaf and dumb as I squeak like a mouse. There's a communist living in the White House. You may say, do I have any evidence to support my suppositions? His grandparents were socialists. His mother was. His father was a communist. He had Marxist professors. He taught a course in college on Saul Alinsky. He told Joe the Plumber on the campaign trail, spread the wealth, which is a direct quote from the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx. He appointed Van Jones to be his green job czar. Van Jones is a purported communist. His church of 20 years, what with Jeremiah Wright preaching, was black liberation theology, which is actually Marxism. Then as soon as he got in office, he had the government take over the banks and the car industry, and now he's trying to jam down our throats socialized medicine and the cap and trade. I mean, how much more proof do you want? Everybody, there's a communist living in the White House. Now what are we going to do about it?
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Thomas Jefferson, in his writings, left us many warnings about corrupt bankers and politicians. I place economy among the first and most important virtues, and public debt as the greatest of dangers to be feared. To preserve our independence, we must not let our rulers load us with perpetual debt. We must make our choice between economy and liberty or profusion and servitude. If we can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under the pretense of caring for them, they will be happy. What our country needs is a wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, and which shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it had earned. Jefferson warned that ignorant and free can never be. He was a true defender of the American dream.
The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
In 1987, some inner city first graders were promised a college education. Now, this promise didn't come from a wealthy corporation. It came from Oral Lee Brown, who saved a large portion of her modest income every year for these children.
She told Miss Brown, you can't do everything I said, no, but we need to do more.
And she did more by sending 19 kids to college, helping others, Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, the Agent for Truth, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. And I kind of messed up Richard's website. It was sheriffmac.com. Is that correct, Richard?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Mac, and Mac is M-A-C-K.
Okay, sheriffmac.com, M-A-C-K. And before the break...
And what I would recommend is people really look at my book so they can see what Judge Roll actually did. He's mentioned in all my books. In my first book that I ever wrote, it kind of has a very eye-catching title and cover with my wife's beautiful hand holding my dad's old FBI snub-nose 38. And the title is From My Cold Dead Fingers, Why America Needs Guns. And Judge Roll is on page 19. His the results of his ruling are throughout the book and most of my book. And on page 2 of my recent little booklet, the little pocket-sized booklet that reviews the Supreme Court decision in the Mac Prince case, is something that is readily available for you and your listeners to just give to people who need to see that state sovereignty is indeed, as Justice Scalia says, one of the structural protections of liberty as proscribed and detailed in our Constitution. And that you know, the only entity that is going to enforce state sovereignty are the states. It's never going to be Washington, D.C. In fact, that's where the threat to state sovereignty is at its zenith. So, again, I would recommend everybody look at this, and I'll be sharing with you some of the things that Judge Roll said. But this was a great judge, a very constitutional patriot who stood for freedom, even against his own boss. The very government and that had control over his salary and career was who he stood against. And it's a very difficult situation to be in. But he did it. And he did it very powerfully. And then back to From My Cold Dead Fingers on page 19, his ruling is actually listed there. And it was the he's the only judge who heard this case out of the dozens who heard the case of from the sheriff defendants across the country, both at the district level and the circuit level, and then finally at the end by the nine United States Supreme Court justices. He's the only one that went so far as to say that this not only violated the 10th Amendment and states' rights and state sovereignty, but it also violated the 5th Amendment because of its threat of arrest to us as the CLEOs, chief law enforcement officers. As mentioned in the Brady Bill, it actually calls us the CLEOs. And the sheriffs were the ones that were the CLEOs and were the ones that got threatened with the arrest in the Brady Bill. And Judge Roll said that that violated the Fifth Amendment due process rights that we have. And so it was an extremely powerful decision. And I'll quote you part of it on page 19 where he says, Congress exceeded its authority under Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution, thereby impermissibly encroaching upon the powers retained by the states. And that right there, look at what he said. Congress exceeded its authority. When was the last time any judge anywhere in America told the United States Congress, and also it would go along very easily that the president also exceeded his authority when he signed it into law? but Congress exceeded its authority. When was the last time any judge anywhere told the United States Congress they actually exceeded their authority when they passed a certain law?
Yeah, that really is phenomenal, you know, that he would do that. And, of course, that was just the one of the first steps as you rose up through the levels of appeal. But thankfully, that was in the record at the beginning, and it was from a judge, and pointing out what you and I would consider to be academic, right? I mean, even though we're not lawyers, to say that the Brady Bill was commandeering the sheriff, you know, what would it have to do with the county attorney or the county supervisors? They were making you do things, and they were going to put you in the clink if you didn't do
it. Right. Well, that was certainly the threat, and, you know, it had nothing to do with the county attorney, had nothing to do with the board of supervisors or the commissioners. It commandeered me and my office directly, and actually, there is one thing the county commissioners should have said about this. They should have opposed the Brady Bill also. They should have joined me in the lawsuit, because the only thing the board of supervisors and the county have to do with me or any other elected official in the county is budget. Well, the Brady Bill was going to take time, money, and effort from our department, but there was no budget approval of doing Brady Bill background checks. And so spending time and money on something that has no budgetary authorization from the county is actually against the law. And they should have been all over that, and they didn't really seem to care. I actually brought that up to them once, but they really didn't seem to care. They you know, they have this kind of same mentality that, well, whatever the government says, that we just got to do, you know. And that's probably the mentality that's been destroying our country more than anything else.
Would you find, I mean, speaking of that kind of mentality, I don't know the man, but I've just seen him on TV, Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dupnik?
Yeah.
What could you comment about him without, you know, as far as factually? I guess we'll stay away from character attacks, but what can you say factually about that gentleman?
Well, I can say basically the same thing I said on Judge Napolitano's show this week. He had me get on his Freedom Watch, and he asked me the same thing, and he was saying some startling things about Judge Dubnik that were absolutely true, though. How can this man get so involved in the vitriolic rhetoric going across the country, and the only thing that he was trying to do is tell people they shouldn't be making vitriolic statements? And no one was more hateful or vitriolic than Sheriff Dubnik, trying to blame people like you and me and others who are involved in the Tea Party movement, and Rush Limbaugh and Sarah Palin and the Tea Party in general. So, you guys shouldn't be talking. You shouldn't be exercising your right to file grievances against government. You shouldn't be bad-mouthing government. People who are unstable can't understand stuff like that, and it's going to prompt them to do horrible things and shoot up people. And I mean, that is absolutely so absurd, it's not even funny. I mean, it's unimaginable that this man, a county sheriff, a lawman for 30 years, just hours after the most horrible crime ever committed in Arizona history, perhaps, and the most horrible crime ever committed in Pima County and Tucson, has time to get involved in the political rhetoric about why this may have occurred in the first place, because the Tea Party movement? And so I said it in my speech last night, and I'll say it again here today. The Tea Party movement, I've been to about 100 different Tea Party rallies and events all across this country, from Honolulu, Hawaii to Bangor, Maine, and I have yet to see anyone even suggest for a moment that this is a call to arms, that this is a support of violence against the government. Never, never, never has anyone done anything racist or been exemplifying bigotry in any of any kind, or nor has anyone, myself or anyone else, suggested that this is a way to once again have a violent overthrow of our government or anything like that. Nothing like that. Absolutely nothing like that. In fact, most of us, including myself, say, look, we already fought the Revolutionary War. We do not need to fight another Revolutionary War against our own government. We need to simply stand for the ideals and principles that were garnered in the Revolutionary War in the first place. And we want those freedoms back. And this is a peaceful process to wake up the people, to wake up our politicians, to have our politicians stop spending us into oblivion, stop spending money we don't have, follow the Constitution, and lo and behold, glory be, maybe even keep your oath of office once in a while. And this is why the statement from Judge Roll is so powerful. As you know, I quote him in every one of my presentations. He's quoted in my books. He is a hero of mine. I am deeply saddened at his passing, especially the way it happened. And I will quote to you another thing he said in his ruling. This made it also worthwhile, the entire movement to stop the Brady Bill and everything that I did, of all the blood, sweat, and tears that I put into this, and ultimately losing my job over this, it all was worthwhile when I saw what Judge Roll said when he issued his ruling. He said, quote, Mac is thus forced to choose between keeping his oath or obeying the act, subjecting himself to possible sanctions, end quote. For a judge to be so insightful and sensitive to the actual true motivation where my heart was really motivated, my heart and soul put into this effort was motivated because my own government was trying to force me to violate my oath to follow a vapid, unconstitutional gun control scheme and to threaten me with arrest if I failed to do it. This is the same question I want every sheriff and peace officer to ask himself. Look at Judge Roll's quote. When we are placed in the same quandary of having to choose between keeping our oath to the people and to the Constitution, who do we side with when legislatures and politicians put unconstitutional legislation in front of us to enforce? Who and what do we side with? Will we keep our word to the Constitution? Will we keep our oath, or will we follow the political statutes and legislation of vapid politicians? I think the answer is a simple one. Let's follow Judge John Roll. Let's see what he said about this, and let's see what our role as true public servants really is. Are we going to keep our oath? Now we have an Oath Keepers organization. We have people standing up, as you have, as other sheriffs across this country are now, Sheriff DeMeo in Nevada, Sheriff Gower in Utah, others who are now seeing that the best way to protect their people is to simply exercise the Constitution within their jurisdiction.
Beautifully, beautifully said. I couldn't agree more. Well, I think we've got a break coming up here relatively soon. So just to recap for the listeners, sheriffmack.com, M-A-C-K, is Richard's website. He's got these phenomenal books that you need to get a copy of because these issues are so relevant to our time. And there's so many Americans that aren't aware of the 10th Amendment, the Constitution as a whole. And of course, it was fun for me to learn more about it as my career unfolded. But every American needs to learn more about the 10th Amendment. And the best way to do that is to learn more about the Sheriff Richard Mack case. So go to SheriffMack.com during the break if you're not driving. And we'll be back with Sheriff Mack after the break. We really appreciate you joining us. And see you after the break.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
This is Randall Yearout on Leaders. Our government leaders swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States before they're allowed to exercise the powers of their offices. This oath automatically requires those office holders to act as a check on usurped or abused power among those within any branch of the government. Why is it, then, that when the Congress assumes for itself powers reserved by the Constitution to the states or the people, the President doesn't object with a defense of the Constitution and refuse to execute unlawful legislation? Or when the President creates Soviet-style czars to violate the public rights, why doesn't the Congress speak up? Or when the court begins striking down the laws of the Union states in violation of the public rights and in favor of international norms, why don't the other two branches bring misdemeanor charges against those offending judges? It appears that our leaders in government think that a non-intervention policy on another branch's behavior is more virtuous than executing the oath they took to support and defend the Constitution. James Madison said in Federalist Paper 51 that if men were angels, no government would be necessary, and that if angels were our governors, no Constitution would be necessary. Our Constitution is necessary, however, and our public officials are proving to us the very reason this is so. The Constitution outlines the restricted powers we, the people, gave to our governors. For our leaders to disobey them is to break the supreme law of the land, which is to be dealt with by impeachment and removal from office. I think the only way to effectively ensure the reinstatement of our American form of law and government is to replace nearly every last congressman with one who will honor his oath.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
Peeling back the layers every day with Frank Talk, 104, news, sports, and more.
And there was a little hiccup yesterday at the White House after President Obama's home teleprompter reportedly malfunctioned during a family dinner. Correspondent Jane Carmichael joins us.
President Obama's home teleprompter suddenly went blank. He sort of froze mid-sentence, but after a few seconds of silence, Obama was able to call up his prepared remarks from memory.
Well, White House Deputy Press Secretary Brenda England addressed this error today.
Look, the President has hundreds of conversations every day, and it simply isn't feasible for him to memorize the text for every single one. Prompter is really just a tool to help the President remember to speak, blink, and breathe.
The prompters just help make sure he doesn't say the wrong thing at any point,
causing Obama to fumble around awkwardly.
The President has increased his reliance on the teleprompter, sending it alone on low-priority diplomatic meetings and photo ops. Well, right after the break, we'll talk to a Philadelphian who knows all the best places to get murdered.
Peeling back the layers every day with Frank Talk, news, sports, and more. The official home of Glenn Beck, Dimas, Alex Jones, Mark Levin, and the hosts of Liberty Works Radio Network.
Husbands, have you ever worried about the risks to your wife's health from the birth control method she's using? Why not learn a natural method that's 99% effective and has no risks to her? You can learn natural family planning in English or Spanish through classes or home study. Search for a class at the Couple to Couple League's website at ccli.org or call 800-745-8252.
Born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Dad, where did the clouds come from? Well, buddy, that's a good question.
Is this worm a boy or a girl? Why are carrots orange?
Actually...
Dad, why don't you have any hair on your head?
How do birds fly?
Why is dirt brown?
Why can't I fly?
Why can't I fly?
Are we there yet?
You may not have all the answers, but if they're comfortable coming to you now when the questions are small, they'll come to you with the bigger questions later.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. Our guest is Richard Mack. He's two-term sheriff in Graham County, Arizona. His website is sheriffmack.com. M-A-C-K is Richard's last name, sheriffmack.com. Some very good books there. You can also ask Richard to come to your hometown and speak. I've been to his speeches. They're awesome. you've got to have him come, and he's willing and able, you just figure out the logistics with him and get that all set up, and he'll fly into your town and take it by storm. It's phenomenal to see him. We were together last in Santa Cruz, California, when Alex Jones came out to Santa Cruz. And that was a great situation. But I thought we only have about 12, 13 minutes before the end of the hour, and you'll have to depart from us, Richard. I'd like to talk a little bit about the actual incident in terms of your comments on protecting yourselves. I understand that this gentleman named Joe Zamudio was a really, well, lots of very brave citizens around, but apparently he was across the street, but not only armed, but, very courageous and smart. Can you tell us anything about the incident itself and some of the hero stories and ways that people can protect themselves and watch out for this kind of thing if it were to happen in the future?
Well, I guess that's another thing I would really wonder about Sheriff Dubnyk. If he was so concerned about the atmosphere of the political rhetoric getting out of hand or going too far, he should have been concerned about that on January 7th. And when he saw that a congresswoman would actually be holding an outdoor event at a shopping area where anybody can come and go, and in an area that is 60 miles north of the Mexican border, with the problems associated with illegal immigration and drug trafficking being quite the problem in that area, why would he not provide some sort of security for a congresswoman holding such an event? Instead of afterwards criticizing people who actually had nothing to do with it, and actually those of us in this movement would invite such security at any of our events, and especially for members of Congress. And so it really makes no sense. And from a logistical standpoint, I would say, as a former sheriff and former colleague of Sheriff Dubnyk's, I would first question would be, how do you have time to insert yourself in this debate and in a political discussion about who might be at fault for this? He should be far too busy managing the investigation of this. He should be answering everyone's question about the order of shooting, how Judge Roll was even involved. Was Judge Roll the target? A federal judge just was taken out in a very alarming manner. The time frame for Judge Roll to have been killed is almost unbelievable that it could happen the way it did. There were several different stories about why Judge Roll was there. When I had heard that Judge Roll was there, I said, he's not even supposed to be at a political rally. For a federal judge to be out at such an event is a conflict of interest. And any judge, but especially a federal district judge who serves in that area, would have to be at arm's length at all times from the political process. And so none of it made sense, but the individuals that were there, and the only one that had a gun, was too far from the scene at the time to actually take the shooter out. And he was, I think, inside Safeway or another nearby store. And he did get over there, and he was interviewed on Fox News by Ed Schultz. And he said that he was going to take him out. He said he had a gun, was trained in it, and was going to take him out. But the entire shooting, which is a lesson for us all, only lasted about 40 seconds. And so the guy got off quite easily, of course, about 19 rounds, this lunatic coward, and did so many horrible, horrific, unimaginable things, and probably the worst is shooting this little angel, 9-year-old Christina Green. And her father has come to be quite a hero to me in this whole event, because he has told the press, and I guess that's why now people aren't interviewing him anymore, is that his daughter's death should not be exploited for more laws, for more politics. And I don't know if you saw any of this, Joe, or any of your listeners, because maybe you and your listeners are smarter than I am. But I actually watched part of the memorial service, and I don't know if you've ever been to a memorial service before, but that was not like any memorial service I had ever seen in my life.
I agree.
It looked more like it either was a State of the Union address, where every time the president uttered 10 words, people in the audience stood and clapped. It looked more like a political rally, or even a national political rally, like the Democratic National Convention, except they just weren't holding up signs and carrying flags. Other than that, the entire mood of the memorial service was patting people on the back and clapping and standing ovations and even hooting and hollering. Literally, hooting and hollering. And I guess it's a kind of goes back to the old adage, you can take the politician out of Washington, D.C., but you just can't take Washington, D.C. out of the politician. And these people, I thought, were very rude, and that the mood of the memorial service was more about politics and hooting and hollering than it was about paying respects to those who had been killed. And I have no political motivation for saying that. I thought what President Obama actually said was pretty good. Most of it was pretty good. And I think he exemplified some leadership that Sheriff Dupnik should have learned from. He was in the audience. And that this is time to try to bring the country together instead of divide it and make the divisions more acute, as Sheriff Dupnik has tried to do. And so I don't understand how Sheriff Dupnik could be so irresponsible and unprofessional in his remarks and what he has done. I'm actually shocked that he involved himself in this process. But he did, and I wish that he would just apologize and get back to the work at hand. And
I couldn't agree
quite
more.
Frankly, it's time for all of us to do the same. We cannot compromise any of our liberties because of what this nut did, and I will never suggest, and none of us should ever, under any circumstance, not for all these types of shootings, not for anyone else, not for politicians, not for anyone, or this horrific event, get so emotionally involved that we think the answer to these sorts of problems will be more gun control or compromising the liberty of Americans. That will never be the solution.
Well said. I mean, that's exactly right. And yet it's so frequent that when these events come up, that's exactly the, the weapon that's pulled out. And I agree with the, as far as the memorial service, I mean, the decorum there or lack thereof, you'd want it to be solemn, I would think. And it wasn't, but I agree, the speakers said some good things, some great things. But the lack of decorum, I thought to myself, am I just getting old now? And I'm looking at these young, because it sounded like more young people that were doing the hooting and hollering, as you said. And I just thought, well, I guess I'm getting old now, because I would think that would be completely inappropriate.
You know, if my child had just been killed and there's a bunch of people hooting and hollering and standing up and clapping and patting each other on the back, I would have been really offended. That is not a memorial service to me. A memorial service has to do with singing and praying and talking about the life of the individual. And no one stands and claps and cheers and yells for the persons up on the stage or at the podium. It's a somber moment. It's a time to reflect, even meditate. And it's a time for, I think, the old scripture or saying, I'm not sure which one it is, that be still and know that I am God. Well, this is a time to be still and know that God is touching our hearts and minds. And that cannot happen with such loud noise and the clanging of hands and making this a political rally. I think was just so inappropriate. And I can't believe that even the mainstream media has not talked about that. And again, it's just an indication of how the media give a free ride to politicians. I would have thought the next day that cartoon editorialists and editorials of USA Today and others, and NBC and ABC and all of those, even those would have been expressing a little bit of surprise about how political that memorial service became.
It even looked like President Obama was taken aback by the amount of noise. I mean, that's the look that he had on his face to me. It was after he arrived. It was after he was already there at his chair with all the other people that were in the front row. And yet these people were just going on and on and on, and he even looked uncomfortable about it.
Well, and I thought that too. And I thought that perhaps he should have maybe raised his hand and tried to stop it, because I thought he was a little uncomfortable too. He just... he could have, I think, easily just said, raised his hand and stopped it a few times, and maybe even asked people, let's save your applause for a little bit later, or save, perhaps let's keep this a little more reverent. I think he should have said something.
Yeah, and he certainly had the opportunity, and it would have been would have been a good lesson for all the people that maybe
for everybody
didn't realize.
Yeah, it would have.
Interesting.
And it's okay for the president to be a teacher. I think this is the first time I've ever used president with his name. I usually just say the guy that occupies the White House, because I'm not sure that he's there lawfully, and so therefore wouldn't really be president. But I'm shocked even more so that, like the little song the girl was singing during the break about a communist in the White House, that's what has me concerned the most about Barack Obama. He is a communist. Everything about his life is communistic. Everything about his agenda is right out of the Marxist platform. And it's in my book, The County Sheriff, America's Last Hope. It starts the very first paragraph. Let's make no bones about it here. Let's be real. The agenda in this country right now from Washington, D.C. is entirely in line with the Marxist platform. And, you know, anybody can read it for yourself. Don't believe me. In fact, I would prefer people don't take my word for it. Study it out for yourself. But this is what I also tell every police officer and sheriff in the country. Don't believe me. Study the Constitution for yourself and then tell me, is our government following the Constitution? Are the politicians following the Constitution and keeping their oath? You tell me. Do your own investigation.
Hey, Richard, thanks for coming on the show. Again, the book, County Sheriff, America's Last Hope, sheriffmac.com. You got to get that book, ladies and gentlemen. It's great. Richard, thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Joe. You too, and I'll be on any time, brother.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Take care.
Fox News Radio. I'm Ron Flatter. 1 week after the killings he is accused of carrying out in Arizona, Jared Loughner is seen in a September video that got him kicked out of school.
This is Pima Community College, one of the biggest scams in America. The students are so illiterate that it affects their daily lives.
The video re-released last night and photos of Loughner now being revealed. Live from Tucson, Fox News Radio's Jessica Rosenthal has more.
Ron, police say they have photos of Loughner posing with a gun, the same model used in the shootings. In the alleged shooter's neighborhood, neighbors like Lisa are still in shock and saddened.
I hope that our neighborhood doesn't feel like the parents are to be afraid of. I wish that they would, you know, kind of have some privacy at this time. I feel like they are victims as well.
Just hours before the shooting, police say Loughner posted a note on MySpace saying goodbye, then went to Walmart and bought bullets and a bag, Ron.
As Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords continues to recover from a bullet wound to her head, President Obama calls on her colleagues to get back to work.
This is still a time of great challenges for us to solve. We've got to grow jobs faster and forge a stronger, more competitive economy. We've got to shore up our budget and bring down our deficits. We've got to keep our people safe.
The president, in his regular Saturday speech, Arizona Congressman Jeff Flake said government must press on in the spirit of Giffords.
Gabby's assailant struck while she was engaged in the most fundamental duty of a lawmaker, listening to her constituents. It's part of what distinguished us from the tyrannies of old, and it continues to separate us from the despotisms of today. The people are sovereign.
Flake in the Republican response to the president. The Dow rose 55 points yesterday, closing a seventh straight week in the black. The 30 industrials gaining 1% since Monday. You're listening to Fox News Radio. Fair and balanced.
Stay connected to Fox News Radio for your favorite talk shows, newscasts on the hour and half hour, and the podcasts that take you a step deeper inside of Fox News. Don't miss a single minute of Your World with Neil Cavuto daily by subscribing to the Daily Podcast.
I'm Neil Cavuto.
Get news and insight on Wall Street and other market activities and get a wrap-up of the business news of the day.
Don't tell me about federal programs that stick to their budget. They don't.
It's Cavuto when you want it and where you want it. Subscribe now by going to foxnewsradio.com and click on the podcast button for Your World with Neil Cavuto. And check out other Fox News Radio podcasts, including John Gibson's My Word.
Hi, I'm John Gibson. You can get My Word every day for no holds barred opinion on the big stories of the day. Gibson, when and where you want at foxnewsradio.com. Just click on the podcast button.
An American diplomat is remembered in Washington.
For the second time in 3 days, President Obama delivering the key remarks at a memorial service, this time at D.C.'s Kennedy Center for the late Richard Holbrooke, his Afghanistan and Pakistan diplomatic point man who died suddenly last month of a burst aorta.
Those who take the measure of his last mission will see his foresight. He understood that the futures of Afghanistan and Pakistan are tied together.
Among the more than 1,000 people attending, the president of Pakistan.
With Pakistan, he created new habits of cooperation to overcome decades of mistrust.
The president calling Holbrooke the leading light of a generation of diplomats. Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
The gunman who killed a New Jersey policeman is still on the loose. Officer Christopher Matlos drove up to the pedestrian in Lakewood yesterday afternoon.
There was an exchange that occurred between the officer and the individual, not hostile, just a question and answer type of thing.
That, says prosecutor Marlene Lynch Ford, is when the suspect shot Matlos 3 times at point blank range before running into a wooded area. Matlos was 27. For one cruise line, a Southern California port of call is no longer.
Carnival Cruise Lines will no longer be sailing out of San Diego starting in 2012. John Gilmore at the Port of San Diego says the Florida-based cruise company can probably make more money elsewhere.
It's more profitable to head to, let's say, Australia, and it's more profitable to have European calls. Mexico figures into the equation, however.
The rising violence in Mexico is making cruises like those leaving from Southern California with Mexican ports of call less attractive to vacationers. In Miami, Eben Brown, Fox News Radio.
Amid street violence, Tunisia has sworn in a temporary president who has asked the prime minister to form a new government. Citizens have rioted in protest of unemployment and corruption, forcing the old president to flee the country. I'm Ron Flatter, Fox News Radio.
The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the second hour of the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. Our guest for the last hour was Sheriff Richard Mack. Again, his website is sheriffmack.com. That's M-A-C-K. And very good interview. For this hour, I'm just as excited, if not even more so. We've got a guest. Her name is Leslie Simmons. She's the co-founder and co-owner of Sims Productions in Sacramento, California. And for those who are on my email list, you were alerted a few days ago to this phenomenal new movie that's coming out. At this point, it's showing in various film festivals. And this weekend, it's showing at the Sacramento Film and Music Festival in Sacramento, California. And tomorrow, Sunday, I'm actually going to be going there to see the film in its entirety. But Leslie gave me a sneak peek back on, I think it was Tuesday morning. Leslie, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Joe. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for, you know, maybe getting up early. You mentioned you have the young baby, and so remember.
Yeah, I'm used to getting up at the 5 o'clock hour, so being here at 8 o'clock is no problem.
that's a benefit, the sleeping in almost.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this movie, this film is called Death or Taxes, and Leslie and her husband James, as I say, own Sims Productions, and I was really impressed when the interview took place last summer. I was at Freedom Fest in Las Vegas with the Bernhoff Law Firm, and was interviewed at that point, as were the attorneys with the Bernhoff Law Firm, and very impressed with the people I met. I met James Simmons at that point, and I'd spoken to Leslie on the phone, but got to meet her last week. So I'd like to just get right into the movie. Maybe you could start with telling the audience about the movie itself, but then, you know, I'd love to get into the inside details of what it was like to film this movie and the people that you interviewed, some of the stories. So please, you have the floor, Leslie.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, really, when the executive producer, you know, approached us, it was about a year ago, a little bit more, probably late February, and it was really after Joe Stack flew his airplane into that building in Austin, Texas. You know, he was very upset with the IRS. If people are aware of his kind of manifesto that was posted on the internet for a while, and I think that after that happened, it was sort of just like really shined a light on sort of the tragic, you know, steps that people take when they're feeling really desperate and frustrated. And after doing a little bit of research, you know, we found that there were other stories that were similar to that, and that's sort of where this idea unfolded. And you know, the brainchild is really, you know, Ronnie Deutsch, who's a tax attorney. She's been a tax attorney for 20 years, and I think
her experience talking to taxpayers for the past 20 years is really sort of, you know, she sees the desperation, she sees the feeling, you know, she hears from people and, you know, how distraught they are when they do owe back taxes and just sort of the downward spiral that they get into. And so she wanted to shine a light on that and sort of show, you know, sort of expose the sort of the maybe injustices or the maybe the way the approach that the IRS takes when people do owe back taxes is sort of really inhumane in some cases. And so we started doing some research and trying to find people who maybe had taken sort of drastic measures and it kind of took us around the country to some really sad stories that really sort of lay out an odd tale, I guess. You know, sort of when people do owe the IRS, sort of, you know, they're having to make these life-changing decisions that are not easy.
What I know that, you know, Richard Hatch, who was the contestant on Survivor and won the $1 million prize, mm-hmm. He's had his own share of tax problems, and he's featured mm-hmm. in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But I know in talking to you last week, you know, there's a lot of stories kind of behind the scenes, because of course there's only so much time you can, or so much footage you can put into the film.
Uh-huh.
What are some of the things that you learned, you know, kind of behind the scenes that you couldn't put in the film, as far as whether it be Richard or any of the other guests?
Well, I mean, you know, just trying to share a balanced story with the viewer was hard. So, you know, I think, for example, with trying to get former IRS Commissioner Charles Rosati to participate in the film. And reaching out to him, I actually was able to speak with him and sort of explain the notion, you know, the idea behind the film, you know, to sort of, because he's been known to, I think, from what I've heard, to sort of speak out against the tax, you know, not against the tax code, but to share his frustrations or to share his perspective that the tax code is very complicated and needs to be reworked. And so I thought he would be a good person, because that's kind of what the film also lays out, is sort of the reason why people get into this trouble is because there's so many you know, ambiguities and it's confusing and layered. And so when I did reach out to him and sort of explain it, he said, well, it sounds like it's a film that, you know, you can easily find people that are pissed off at the IRS, you know, or upset with the IRS, and you know, he felt like he didn't want to participate because it's so easy to find people that don't want to work with the IRS, but, you know, and so he sort of saw that as his way to, you know, just sort of ignore it, you know, rather than sort of say, yes, there's these challenges and, you know, there are some sad situations, but, you know, maybe here's a solution.
Well, I think it's
so, you know, that sort of thing was sort of frustrating because, you know, as a producer, I want to sort of tell, I want to sort of show both sides, you know, here's why people get into trouble. And so it was really hard to sort of show that side because nobody from the IRS would participate. One of our first experiences, you know, this was kind of a fast-track documentary. You know, we kind of basically got on board early March or so, and by the middle of March we were flying to Denver. We took an opportunity. There was a taxpayer advocate panel happening in Denver a weekend in, or during the week sometime in March. And so we thought, hey, well, let's go to that. Maybe they'll allow us to film it, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk to some taxpayers who want to go and sort of go to this town hall-style meeting with the IRS, and the taxpayer advocate, Nina Olson, was going to be there. And so I reached out and tried to talk to their media specialist and got a hold of her, and, you know, they basically said, no, you can't film the event because we want to protect taxpayers' identities if they have questions and concerns. So we flew out anyway in hopes of maybe trying to arrange an interview with some of the taxpayer advocates in that area and also potentially Nina Olson. And we got out there, and then we are also, at the same time, I was trying to coordinate some interviews in the area while we were there. So I actually, the first stop we made was to a gentleman in the Denver area who had been working for the last 30 years with taxpayers who got themselves into bad back debt. And this is our first interview we did for the documentary, and this gentleman, I'm not going to say his name, he actually he doesn't want to be identified because he fears he will face backlash from the IRS for being critical of the IRS. And we actually had to darken his, you know, like film him in a silhouette and put effects on it so that he couldn't be identified. And so as we're leaving that interview, we're thinking, this is not going to be an easy documentary to produce, because it was just, you know, sort of eye-opening to us to realize that, wow, people really are afraid of the IRS. You know, there's this fear there, and trying to learn to understand that. And then when we went to this event, this taxpayer advocacy panel, which was an open forum, I mean, everybody there, all the media people, the IRS people were, like, you know, just kind of on us, like hawks, like just so worried that we were going to, I don't know what they thought we were going to do. Like, they were just all over us, like little flies almost. And then I actually went and approached Nina Olson prior to the event. I said, hi, I'm producing a documentary about our tax system. You know, I'd love it if you could talk to us. And, you know, and then her, you know, her media person came up behind her and was like trying to get her attention while I was talking to her so that they could make me go away. But she declined to be interviewed, needless to say.
She declined, too. So she'll show up on, you know, those Washington, D.C. shows, but she wouldn't be interviewed, and she was right there. It's not like she couldn't have taken 5 minutes to just...
Yeah, you know, and what she, it's kind of funny because what she said when we were sitting there discussing it, you know, she said, oh, well, you know, it's really hard for me to go through the process of getting approval to be interviewed. She said, you should see, I mean, National Geographic... did a project, and it took them months to get approval to interview me, you know, sort of something like that. So,
well, I, you know, and I experienced that when I was an agent, even though at a, you know, much lower level, but any kind of media attention, any kind of remark whatsoever to the media, to anybody really outside the IRS, would require this long level of these high levels of approval.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's one thing that an organization needs to, you know, keep tabs on things. But, I mean, when you find that when you ask for approval and you rarely get it, and then you wonder, well, who's this approval coming from,
mm-hmm.
you know, how high up or how low does it have to go to get, you know, the approval to even speak to the public? So I'm not surprised that that was kind of your experience. And I'm
mm-hmm.
sure it, there's many more.
Yeah.
Did you, let's see, so as far as the, any other IRS people that you tried to interview?
Well, we did, there's a couple, actually. I mean, we did reach out to, you know, Richard Hatch, as you know, had, you know, his troubles. So we tried to reach out to the tax person that he, you know, was sort of in relationship with or was seeking him out. And, again, same thing, you know, basically I sent a letter to this person, it went up the ranks, and then the media specialist from that area called and basically said, you know, what's this about? Why do you want to talk to this person, I think, she asked, and then said basically, you know, there's no, they declined to participate, they said there's no advantage to them to participate, you know, there's no reason for them to participate. And it's just a shame, I think, because I feel like, even if they don't agree with what people are saying about the IRS, they need to share their perspective. I mean, IRS is not, you know, if you talk to most people on the street, they don't really like the IRS. And what an opportunity, I think, to say, well, yeah, sure, maybe you don't like the IRS, but here's why it's challenging. You know, it's not always, it's not just like an agent's fault. It's a system issue. And it's not like we're trying to blame any one person. I think that it's something that's been developed over the last 100 years, and you know, I think that just because we're critical of it or sharing stories of people who had really horrible situations and you know, with the IRS, I think that, you know, they need to come out and speak out and say, yeah, we understand that you're frustrated, or we understand that this person had this challenge, but here's, maybe they could explain their perspective. You know, oh, this person didn't respond to the 12 notices we sent them, or whatever it is, if that's the case. But at this point, you know, we don't know their side of the story. So, you know, we have to take, you know, we have to hear the stories of the people that we interviewed, and that's what we've got.
Yeah, and you know, you certainly made your best attempts over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's been over 10 years since I left the IRS, and then having seen the culture inside the IRS, I always you know, feel like saying something to a documentarian or somebody when they want to interview. They say, well, we're going to go to D.C. and we're going to get all these interviews. And I wonder, like, well, should I tell them ahead of time that that might not pan out too well? And over again, it's the same result. They just don't want to talk to people, and yet, you know, here they are administering a tax system, and they don't want to talk to the very people that they're administering the tax system to. Anyway, our guest is Wesley Simmons, Simmons Productions, and we'll be right back after these messages to talk more about the film, Death or Taxes. Really happy that you joined us this morning.
Join the Cavalcade to Freedom. The Cavalcade back to constitutional government. Climb on board and do your part to proclaiming liberty throughout the land. Join and support Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. To view the strategic plan, to spread the word, and to get information on joining, go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com or call the fellowship office at 410-857-5444. That's 410-857-5444. To join the Cavalcade to Freedom. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can. Tax the sunrise.
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees?
Who can tax the trees?
Let you run a business and collect up all the fees. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make to pay for all. Healthcare, climate change, pollution. Throw away the Constitution. And who can give a bailout?
Who can give a bailout?
Tell us to behave.
Tell us to behave.
And make the founding fathers roll over in their grave. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government. It up well as I make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make. They're power hungry and malicious. Their economics are fictitious. Soon we'll have to eat our dishes.
Delicious.
Oh, who can be a failure? Self raise the government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they make it up well as they make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
And your Uncle Sam can, cause he mixes it well as they makes it all taste good.
Makes it all taste good.
And I feel so good, cause the government says I should.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Overcome. Pass it on.
When Marlon Shirley was 5 years old, he was in an accident and lost his foot, but he didn't lose his heart.
When you tackle a challenge that you just cannot even fathom tackling, when you accomplish that, the amount of integrity and the will and the heart that you'll get from that experience is what will set you up for your life.
In less time than it took Marlon Shirley to say that, he can now run 100 meters because today he's the world's fastest amputee. Overcoming. Pass it on.
America. Born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. Our guest is Leslie Simmons. She's the co-founder and co-owner of Sims Productions in Sacramento, California. Their website is simsproductions.com, and that's S-I-M-Z, simsproductions.com. And then the movie website is deathortaxes.com. Pretty easy to remember, deathortaxes.com. And it is a phenomenal movie. You know, Leslie, I was talking to my producer, Jane, during the break, and she made a very good point, and that when these people from the IRS don't want to be interviewed, it's a pretty good indication that they really don't want to be held accountable. Because, you know, as I learned during my interview, I mean, you're asked questions and you have to respond, mm-hmm. and you're on camera, mm-hmm. and so you really are held accountable for what you are, what you do, what your beliefs are, and they didn't want to be held accountable.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. It's very likely. It's too bad, you know. Like I said, I wanted to be able to tell, if, you know, get their perspective, and you know, without that, you know, we have what we have, which I think are still some really, really great stories. But I really would have liked them to respond to some of these tragic stories and really get their perspective on it. You know, why? What can we change? And why? They have made changes. The IRS, we know. I mean, I can talk about Shirley Barron, who is also featured in our film. And she actually testified at the 1998 hearings to Congress about her experience. And I think that her story sort of helped spurn some of those changes. She just sort of exemplifies the abuse that so many taxpayers prior to the changes that they made in 1998 experienced. But I don't know enough about the IRS, you know, honestly. I mean, I know some, but I don't know enough to really know how much it's changed over the last 12 years since those changes took place.
Thank goodness you weren't afraid of any backlash. You're simply, doing what the filmmaker does. And I was, you know, we only had time to show me some excerpts, but of course mm-hmm. the excerpts that I saw were phenomenal. And I could still see the basic, you know, framework of the film. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait till tomorrow when I'll get to actually watch it. Maybe you could talk about, let's see, why don't we talk about the most devastating interview in terms of sadness?
Gosh, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, the two first folks that we interview, you know, are people that, you know, everybody kind of knows Richard Hatch's story to some extent. They don't know the full story. But Shirley Barron, the one I was just mentioning, she is a librarian. She comes from a little town called Derry in New Hampshire. And her husband, in the, I think the early 90s, opened a business, a recycling plant, or I think some sort of recycling plant. And it failed. And they claimed something like $80,000 in losses on their tax return. and ultimately ended up getting audited. Those losses got disallowed for whatever reason, and ended up sort of going through this process where they owed, a good chunk of money to the IRS. And as they were going through that process, it was very challenging for them. They had a CPA, they had a lawyer. You know, they went through, did everything correctly. You know, he was a lawyer. You know, they were very like law-abiding, homegrown folks, and ultimately, it's just all the stress. What happened is the IRS filed a lien against their home, and what I believe, if I can remember my story correctly, the bank that owned the mortgage on their home was being purchased by a larger bank, and so they decided this larger bank was going to foreclose on this home, and because, you know, they don't want this lien on home. And when that happened, they got the notice. I think it just put her husband, Bruce, over the edge. You know, he'd had enough. He was tired of the harassment and the stress that this was causing. And that same day, I believe, he took his own life because he was just overwhelmed. And he wrote a note, and that's what it said. It said, you know, the IRS and the bank are, you know, they don't listen. And, you know, this is why I'm doing this. And he was hoping just to let his, you know, that his life insurance funds would help support his family. And at this time, you have to know, they actually had an offer and compromise accepted by the IRS for something of like $30,000. So with the life insurance policy, you know, they called, they said, okay, we're ready to pay this. They hadn't ever gotten a bill from the IRS after, even though their offer and compromise had been accepted. So they're waiting for the bill. And, you know, after he passed away, they called the IRS, say, okay, we want to really get this settled. We have the funds available. And they said, oh, Bruce Barron passed away? Well, that's changed the situation. This offer and compromise is no longer valid because we now know you have this extra $250,000 in life insurance funds.
Ugh.
And so they actually pursued that money again. And I think Shirley, I mean, when you see her in the film, she's just this nice, sweet little lady who, you know, is not political and, you know, always paid her taxes and not involved in this kind of, you know, situation. And she just had had enough. And she decided that she was going to fight and sue the IRS. That was the only, I guess, way they could figure out what to do. And so they sued the IRS for wrongful death. And fortunately, with the help of her lawyer and a PR firm in New Hampshire, it was Scott Tranchmontaine was the guy behind the PR. And they basically just did this full blast of media because they figured that that was the only way for them to get the attention that they needed to really nail this lawsuit. Because, you know, the IRS, you know, basically this is a small town lawyer from New Hampshire that was working with her. Bill Brennan is his name. And, you know, he was up against 15 IRS lawyers, you know, federally funded, you know, big time lawyers. And so they took this media opportunity and just threw her on the news, you know, in front of everybody and telling her story. And they were able to gain enough attention that actually Senator Judd Gregg, I believe his name is, or Greg Judd, now I'm getting it confused. The senator from New Hampshire got involved and was able to get her the attention that was needed. And eventually, after a lot of time, you know, the IRS settled the deal and wiped away all her debt. And, you know, she didn't win the lawsuit, but she was able to get all that debt cleared and get that behind her. So when we actually approached her, you know, she hadn't done a media interview for 12 years. She said, you know, I thought this was over. I thought the IRS had been reformed. You know, I thought that we weren't going to have to deal with these sad stories anymore. And, you know, she was very generous in her interview. And, you know, her point at the end of the film, even she's on camera, she says, you know, I asked her, why did you choose to do this interview with us? And she said, you know, if there's anything I can do to help taxpayers like me, I'll do it. And so she feels that she needs to continue, you know, if there's still abuse happening around the IRS and around taxpayers, that she needs to be able to speak out. And so she shared her story, and it's just so sad, you know, that somebody had to lose their life over, you know, IRS tax debt.
Interesting that the woman who had gone through so much heartache felt accountable,
mm-hmm.
you know, to speak and share her story and her perspective, but, you know, people working for the IRS don't. So, and did I remember that at the end of the film, do you show a list of people that refused to be interviewed, or am I
yeah, we do. And there's probably people even missing off that list. You know, we requested tons of interviews with legislators, you know, because legislators need to answer to this too. I mean, they're the ones that write the tax code. They're the ones that put everything in that. And it's frustrating when you don't get a response from them too, because, I mean, they ultimately are accountable. You know, the IRS, you know, enforces these laws, and, you know, we need to look at how they enforce those laws. But we also need to look at the laws, and the fact that the tax code is just so confusing for most people, it's, you know, I think that it's something to look at. And when, again, you know, the legislators are refusing to participate too and to answer to that, most of them. You know, we were able to talk to a couple, but.
And, yeah, so it seemed like the list was quite long of what you did include,
yeah.
Which is, again, a shame. Well, how about a little bit about the gentleman who had a bulldozer?
Yeah, Terry Hoskins. A lot of people might know his story. It happened, I think, probably last March.
Knowledge and the depth of the coverage in this book.
As we see more and more GMO foods on the shelves, this information is good to know.
I am thankful to God for you, Linda.
I can't say enough about this book.
Blessings to you and your family.
The greatest effect this book has had on me and my family is that we truly see Earth's bounty everywhere.
Folks, thanks for letting us help you get back to basics. Read all of the testimonials at ofthefield.com. You can order online for you and your loved ones, or call 1-888-51-EAT-FREE to share in the secret.
At every moment. And,
you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself.
Well, and he said,
you can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wages and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible.
Sometimes he was able to save up enough money and get the help to build this home, which he did with the help of all his, you know, contractor buddies. And so what happened, too, in this scenario is the tax collector was trying to get the names of everybody who had participated in building his house, because they had done all this trade, you know, bartering. So trying to pursue all the people that he had bartered with, and when he wouldn't give up that list of people that he bartered with, that's when she really went after him. And so she cut off his credit lines. He owns a carpet sales office, like he sells carpet. And, you know, a lot of those kinds of places, they need to have credit lines available for their customers. And she was somehow able to work with the bank to take away his credit so that now customers couldn't use credit lines to purchase his product, which affects his business and sales. And so he kind of got taken in many different ways. So he just had enough, bulldozed his home. And when we went out there in, I think it was early May probably, it was still, you know, all destroyed and just so sad. You know, his business was doing okay, but, you know, his personal life was turned upside down. He was still in the fight of his life. And now what he had worked so hard for in his life was gone. So his story is another just really sad story. I mean, luckily nobody died in that situation. But, you know, when you take your home away and, you know, he had this beautiful property with a pond and, you know, it's so sad. It was really, really tragic. And, you know, his daughter was affected too. And, you know, just hearing those stories and seeing what a hardworking man he was, it was really amazing. Because when I went out there, honestly, when I was on my way to Ohio, I was thinking, this guy is, you know, he's a wild man. I don't know. I don't think we're going to be able to nail him down for an interview. And, you know, when we got there, he was, you know, the media portrays people in this horrific way that they're just these monsters or they're crazy. And, you know, he was just a regular guy who just had enough, had been fed up. So that was sort of eye-opening for me to, like, meet these people. Even Richard Hatch, you know, the way that the media portrays him is that he's, you know, what an idiot for, you know, not paying his taxes on his $1 million. But when you hear his story, you realize it's a lot more complicated than that, you know, that he, this is a guy who's always paid his taxes and, you know, and we all know he won $1 million, so why would he just not pay those taxes, so.
Right. Well, it's the entity that bites the hand that feeds it. Well, our guest is Leslie Simmons, and simsproductions.com and deathortaxes.com are the websites, and we'll be back for one more segment after this break. Thanks for joining us.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
This is Randall Yearout on Subversion. Just based on current facts before us, our nation's political leaders in elected office and both major parties have embraced policies and legislation subversive to our American form of law and government. Therefore, I think it profitable to visit the wisdom of our founding fathers regarding this kind of behavior. Samuel Adams, regarding spreading the wealth around and centralized control of the economy, said these ideas are, quote, as visionary and impractical as those which vest all property in the crown. They are arbitrary, despotic, and in our form of government, unconstitutional. Unquote. These charges could be aimed directly at our president and Congress today. Thomas Jefferson wrote of a central government so strong that it borders on monarchy, "These men have no right to office. If a monarchist be in office anywhere, and it be known to the president, the oath he has taken to support the Constitution imperiously requires the instantaneous dismission of such officer, and I hold the president criminal if he permitted such to remain. To appoint a monarchist to conduct the affairs of a republic is like appointing an atheist to the priesthood." Unquote. The situation in America today is socialism for we the people and a political class who think they're monarchs rather than our agents. Congressmen openly insulting citizens exercising their First Amendment rights to redress. Congressmen taxing future generations without their consent. Presidents and judges approving of all this with their silence. These will be our defining years in the eyes of our children and grandchildren, but if we do nothing, we will come to nothing. We need Americans in great numbers to join us.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
Liberty Works Radio Network.
The American dream was nurtured in the beginning by Thomas Jefferson, one of the greatest defenders of liberty in our history. It was Jefferson's words in the Declaration of Independence that proclaimed God's plan for government to be ordained. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. He clearly understood that history has proven government to be the tool of the greedy and the power hungry, that mankind, seeking safety, is forever falling into the trap of total reliance on government. He warned, "It is error alone that needs the support of government. Truth can stand by itself."
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in progress. Broadcasting.
Are you concerned about the side effects of using hormonal birth control? Look into a natural method of family planning that's 99% effective, environmentally green, and causes no risks to your health. For information on learning natural family planning in English or Spanish through classes or home study, see the Couple to Couple League's website at ccli.org or call 800-745-8252.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were a real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the final segment of the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, freedomabovefortune.com and agentfortruth.com. Our guest for this hour has been Leslie Simmons. She's the co-founder and co-owner of Sims Productions. That's S-I-M-Z, a little play on the last name of Simmons. SIMZ Sims Productions in Sacramento, California. Their website is Sims Productions, that's with a Z, S-I-M-Z, simsproductions.com. And the movie we're talking about, the film, is Death or Taxes. And the website for the film is deathortaxes.com. And so we've had a really great interview with Leslie talking about the kind of behind-the-scenes look at the filming of the documentary. To make sure we talk about this and we don't get cut off near the end of the segment, Leslie, tell the listeners, you'd mentioned to me about how the process works, the film festivals and looking for a distributor. So I'm sure people are itching to see the film, but probably can't get to Sacramento by tomorrow. Any ideas about where other film festivals across the country might occur, and then you know, the time frame as to when it might be get a distributor, be shown in theaters, go to DVD, that kind of thing?
Well, we are, you know, we're on the trail, so a lot of we have still to hear from a lot of film festivals. So we've probably submitted to quite a few dozen at least. We still have more to submit to. A lot of film festivals, you know, they're kind of spread out across the year. So we're still waiting to hear from a lot, really kind of entering festivals all over the nation. So we're kind of going to wait and see where we go. And we'll definitely, I think we're going to have to keep that updated on our website, probably build a page out so that we can let people know. But people can also contact me and, you know, let me know if they want to hear news about when and where we're going to be, and I'll can create a mailing list so that I can let people know. Okay. So yeah, we're looking for a distributor, and we'll definitely hope to have something finalized probably by the fourth quarter at the latest of this year.
Well, certainly you guys work fast. I mean, it was,
yeah, we do.
You started in early 2010, and by the summer, we were there in Las Vegas, and you interviewed Robert Bernhoff, Robert Barnes, and myself. And then when I got the email in December that, you know, actually I think it was November, I look back here, I was thinking, wow, do they work fast?
Yep.
If people, deathortaxes.com, I'm sure we'll have updates, and also, you know, people that join my email list at freedomabovefortune.com. I like to keep people updated on these very important projects, and especially guests that I've had on the show. As I usually do during the break, so I'm talking to my producer, and we were talking about the IRS Restructuring and Reform Act, basically those hearings that were going on in 1997, and remarking about how sad it is as time goes on that there's this window dressing kind of thing that, you know, Congress claims that they're doing something about all these horrendous problems, but it really is window dressing, and the problems continue, and they get worse. And so it, you know, certainly, sadly, isn't a surprise that you know have plenty of people to find that have horror stories, because I think that's basically the way the IRS does business. The only people that, well, people that don't encounter any problems are just fortunate, because, you know, everything matches up. Their W-2 matches what they put on their tax return, and
yeah,
everything matches up. But I mean, if you're one of those people where it doesn't quite match up, look out.
Yep. And yeah, I mean, when you are a small business owner or a bigger business owner, or, you know, a person who files a Schedule C, you know, it isn't always easy to figure out all that stuff. It can be complicated.
So pretty merciless when your number comes up. Well, I also noticed about the film, one thing that I liked is that you do mix in facts and figures, and not, you know, statistics, and not in a boring way at all. I mean, it's quite a entertaining way that you weave in the statistics about how much taxes people pay and what kind of taxes people pay, and into your life. I mean, and you kind of have this neat effect where the person picks up the phone and you show this little bubble about how much tax they're paying just for that phone call. And I really like that, because I think the movie really hits a person, the viewer, with things that they can identify with.
Yeah, I mean, that was the point. You know, I think we really want to, I mean, we all have to pay taxes. We all are part of this system. And again, the film's not about, you know, it's not, you know, where our taxes go is a whole other separate issue. You know, I mean, that's like a whole other, I mean, especially here in California, it's like, you know, a big topic right now. You know, funding and, you know, deficits and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it does, I mean, taxes are something that impact all of our lives, whether it's sales tax or income tax or any other kind of tax, gas tax. And he participated with us, and I actually didn't get a chance to sit down with him myself, but I've seen, you know, his full interview, and he has some very interesting tales of being a tax collector, sort of his love-hate relationship with his experience, you know, because, as he says, you know, working for the IRS can be somewhat addictive, he says, because of this power that you have. And he tells some stories of, you know, going out and sort of just how this addictive feeling, you know, just drove him to doing some really extraordinary things to try to collect assets from taxpayers. That I think if any of us knew that people were doing this that were paid by the government, we would really want some change, you know. So if you see the story, I don't want to give too much away because I want to, you know, pique people's interests. But he did some pretty amazing things to try to collect assets. And sure, not the only one, because he's a good guy, and I know that there's people out there that are probably not as nice as he.
Right. Yeah, and he was a revenue officer, which is the collector in the collection division of the IRS, and he was there long enough to certainly see, you know, or maybe implement some dirty tricks himself, and then see what his colleagues were doing, mm-hmm. and so yeah, certainly his knowledge of what they can do is pretty extraordinary, and you know, for him to come out and write a book about it. Mm-hmm. Very instructive for the public to get a window into what goes on there at the collection officer's desk.
Yeah, and he, you know, it's interesting because he really talked a lot about, too, the isolation that he felt as an IRS worker, as you know, a revenue agent, and how they were kind of in this bubble because he felt like nobody in the regular world understood his experience or understood his job. And, you know, I think he really struggled with that. I think that, you know, they would all just hang out with each other even after work, and you know, sort of this weird little bubble, I think, because you know, I don't quite know. I don't really, because I never worked there. You might understand it better than me, but it sounds like nobody in the outside world sort of understands what a revenue officer experiences, and you know, kind of the brain. Like maybe it's just a way that they need to process their job, and you know, they can't. Maybe it's like it's almost like ignorance is bliss, and if they don't know, if they're not in touch with the regular outside world and they're just focused on their job, it's easier.
Yeah, I often joke when I speak that, you know, as far as I didn't have that many friends as it was, and so when I was choosing between the FBI and the IRS, I thought, well, if I go on the IRS, then I won't have any friends.
Mm-hmm. So, well, and you talk about it, too, in the interview where you say that people that work in the IRS are really compartmentalized. And so they don't have this big picture view. You know, they're just in there doing their one job that they have, and they don't really realize that there's other pieces that are affecting taxpayers. You know, they just are focused on that one thing. So.
Right. I mean, and that's, I think, one of the biggest dangers. It's a benefit to the IRS, but it's a detriment to the people, because that compartmentalization, it's the worst kind of bureaucracy, because everybody's just saying, well, I'm going to do my job, I'm going to get my paycheck, I'm going to get my pension. And meanwhile, when you put all those people together and their tasks and what they're doing, the result is tyranny. I mean, it's just god-awful, horrible tyranny. And, you know, that's, your film does an excellent job of showing that, and not in a way that's gratuitous. You're just telling the story. And as you said, you're willing to go to both sides, get both sides' views of it. But really, the best you could get was at least some former employees like myself or Mr. Yancey, and then all these horror stories that people in the public have experienced.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see. We only have a couple minutes left, but. Any last thoughts on just the overall film, your impressions? I mean, after now having filmed it, you know, put it in the can, ready to distribute, what's your overall impressions of this piece of work?
Well, I mean, I hope that the film opens people's eyes. You know, that's really our goal, is to get people to talk about these issues. And, you know, people, I think, if they do owe the IRS, they feel a lot of shame. And I think that our goal, and you know, Ronnie's goal, is to expose that the fact that millions of people owe the IRS, millions of people face these struggles, and that it's not something to feel ashamed about. It's something that you should speak out about and say, you know, we need help, and this system is broken, and we need to figure out a solution. You know, because it seems like a really big issue. You know, I think that it feels bigger than a one person. You know, it's bigger. And when you owe the IRS, I think you feel like there's no way out. But I think if you realize that there's so many people in the world that are facing these issues, you might feel more empowered to sort of say, hey, I'm being abused, and we need to fix this, and there needs to be a better solution. So I think that's sort of our message and our hope, that this sort of helps expose that, and maybe we'll make some change.
Excellent point, and I couldn't agree more. And I think the thing that we lack as a people, the country, is that enough people aren't getting on board and you know, recognizing that when their neighbor, as they'll see in this movie, you know, that basically their neighbor is being attacked like this. We all need to band together and fix it, and not run from the interviewer's camera and microphone like the people in the IRS did. Anyway, our guest is Leslie Simmons, and it's Sims Productions, that's S-I-M-Z, simsproductions.com, and deathortaxes.com. Leslie, thanks very much for joining us, and I guess I'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you, Joe. See you then.
Have a great day.
Remember, deathortaxes.com.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Fox News Radio. I'm Ron Flatter. 1 week after the killings he is accused of carrying out in Arizona, Jared Loughner is seen in a September video that got him kicked out of school.
This is Pima Community College, one of the biggest scams in America. The students are so illiterate that it affects their daily lives.
The video re-released last night, and photos of Loughner now being revealed. Live from Tucson, Fox News Radio's Jessica Rosenthal has more.
Ron, police say they have photos of Loughner posing with a gun, the same model used in the shootings. In the alleged shooter's neighborhood, neighbors like Lisa are still in shock and saddened.
I hope that our neighborhood doesn't feel like the parents are to be afraid of. I wish that they would, you know, kind of have some privacy at this time. I feel like they are victims as well.
Just hours before the shooting, police say Loughner posted a note on MySpace saying goodbye, then went to Walmart and bought bullets and a bag, Ron.
As Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords continues to recover from a bullet wound to her head, President Obama calls on her colleagues to get back to work.
This is still a time of great challenges for us to solve. We've got to grow jobs faster and forge a stronger, more competitive economy. We've got to shore up our budget and bring down our deficits. We've got to keep our people safe.
The president, in his regular Saturday speech, Arizona Congressman Jeff Flake said government must press on in the spirit of Giffords.
Gabby's assailant struck while she was engaged in the most fundamental duty of a lawmaker, listening to her constituents. It's part of what distinguished us from the tyrannies of old, and it continues to separate us from the despotisms of today. The people are sovereign.
Flake in the Republican response to the president. The Dow rose 55 points yesterday, closing a seventh straight week in the black. The 30 industrials gaining 1% since Monday. You're listening to Fox News Radio. Fair and balanced.
Stay connected to Fox News Radio for your favorite talk shows, newscasts on the hour and half hour, and the podcasts that take you a step deeper inside of Fox News. Don't miss a single minute of Your World with Neil Cavuto daily by subscribing to the Daily Podcast.
I'm Neil Cavuto.
Get news and insight on Wall Street and other market activities, and get a wrap-up of the business news of the day.
Don't tell me about federal programs that stick to their budget. They don't.
It's Cavuto, when you want it, and where you want it. Subscribe now by going to foxnewsradio.com and click on the podcast button for Your World with Neil Cavuto. And check out other Fox News Radio podcasts, including John Gibson's My Word.
Hi, I'm John Gibson. You can get My Word every day for no holds barred opinion on the big stories of the day. Gibson, when and where you want, at foxnewsradio.com. Just click on the podcast button.
An American diplomat is remembered in Washington.
For the second time in 3 days, President Obama delivering the key remarks at a memorial service, this time at D.C.'s Kennedy Center for the late Richard Holbrooke, his Afghanistan and Pakistan diplomatic point man who died suddenly last month of a burst aorta.
Those who take the measure of his last mission will see his foresight. He understood that the futures of Afghanistan and Pakistan are tied together.
Among the more than 1,000 people attending, the president of Pakistan.
With Pakistan, he created new habits of cooperation to overcome decades of mistrust.
The president calling Holbrooke the leading light of a generation of diplomats. Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
The gunman who killed a New Jersey policeman is still on the loose. Officer Christopher Matlos drove up to the pedestrian in Lakewood yesterday afternoon.
There was an exchange that occurred between the officer and the individual. Not hostile, just a question and answer type of thing.
That, says prosecutor Marlene Lynch Ford, is when the suspect shot Matlos 3 times at point blank range before running into a wooded area. Matlos was 27. For one cruise line, a Southern California port of call is no longer.
Carnival Cruise Lines will no longer be sailing out of San Diego starting in 2012. John Gilmore at the Port of San Diego says the Florida-based cruise company can probably make more money elsewhere.
It's more profitable to head to, let's say, Australia, and it's more profitable to have European calls. Mexico figures into the equation, however.
The rising violence in Mexico is making cruises like those leaving from Southern California with Mexican ports of call less attractive to vacationers. In Miami, Eben Brown, Fox News Radio.
Amid street violence.